can get candy. Come on.
I hate it.
All right. Post game, Cenk, Anna, and Matt with you guys.
Hey, Matt.
Hello.
Okay. We're going to get to Matt in a second. And we're going to find out his whole life in just one quick post game. But I want to tell you two things that are fun. One is Bart just came in there with Christmas songs. That was to a dig at Anna, who thought the Halloween theme was too early. So he's like, "Oh, you want to see too early? How about Christmas?" Okay.
I tweeted the other day that I support the war on Christmas because Christmas has encroached outside of its territory and needs to be pushed back into December where it belongs.
I totally disagree with you guys. Christmas cannot last long enough. And the minute he played that, I immediately got it in a holiday mood. And it's funny because the leaves are changing color. He even here in LA to some degree. And this morning I thought, you know what? I haven't spent enough time getting excited about Thanksgiving.
Oh, Thanksgiving is the best. I love Thanksgiving.
Okay.
It is the best holiday.
Agreed. I've now come up with a new thing called America Points. Mm-hmm. You have gained some America Points for that.
All right.
J.R. Jackson yesterday on the program gained tremendous America Points for having his own bowling ball.
Right.
And even his own bowling shoes. But unfortunately, he lost some America Points in the production meeting for confusing a tackle and a guard in an offensive line. So
this is John?
No, this was JR.
Oh, what?
I know.
When you said that, I'm like, there's no way that's JR.
Yeah.
He must have mentioned John and I've missed it, but anyway.
Do we as a country all gain America points because we got knocked out of the World Cup running so quickly? Because
that's a good point.
That's not really an American sport.
Oh, yeah, what? Yeah. Okay. America, nice job on getting knocked out of the World Cup. You gain America points. Good point, Matt. And one more thing. I forgot to tell you guys the whole healthcare story. I didn't cover it today. It's going to go in the OT. I ran out of time, so don't worry. We're going to tape it. So you guys are all members. Don't forget to check that out because what happened with healthcare today is really, really important. And I want to make sure that I covered it for you guys. Okay, now, Matt. So Matt was the executive editor?
Editor in chief
of Rotten Tomatoes. And he was a longtime TYT host on What the Flick. Matt, do you remember when you started?
You started all the way at TYT. That was, I believe, 2010, maybe a little bit earlier because I had come on. Maybe 2009, I had come on to talk movies with you guys. And then Ben and I were talking about movies that we'd seen because that was the era that Ben had been doing at the movies. And then I think you wanted to go to screenings. And so that's what inspired us to create What the Flick so that you could go to screenings.
That is a libelous charge. I can't believe you would say that. That's probably at least half true. Those were the good old days when I had time to go to screenings.
Right. And then, So there still to this day on What the Flick, there is a running joke where if all of us hate something and one of the panelists likes something and drags our average up, we call that janking the score up.
Yeah, because back in the day, I was on What the Flick. And by the way, the other reason we started What the Flick was we're like, we know all these amazing movie people.
Yeah.
Why don't we do a movie review show? Okay, including Matt. And so I would go to a movie, and if I hated it, I would jank down the score, but that happened less often. Like Prometheus, I gave a zero. Okay, the ending was the worst. Anyway, I don't want to get back into that. But for a lot of the movies, I was like, well, that was a fun movie. That was really great. Mm-hmm. 9.7.
Right. And Ben and I would just be, you gave 9.7 to 2012? What are you doing?
I didn't give it to 2012.
You're embarrassing us.
To be fair, although that was a great movie by a wonderful progressive John Cusack. Anyway.
Maybe it was, you know what it was? I think that you, one of the ones that was iconic that you loved more than us was Clash of the Titans remake.
Oh, Clash of the Titans, release the Kraken. On that alone, you got to give it a 9. That's what checking out the score is. Okay, so Matt, we established for those that don't watch What the Flick, Matt's been around for a long time with us, at least 8 years, And it was huge, well, built Rotten Tomatoes in a lot of ways. And now the head of programming here. But let's go back in our hot tub time machine.
Okay.
Okay, where were you born? Where did you grow up?
I was born in Kansas City.
Oh, and lived, you gain America points.
Thank you. And lived in Kansas City until 1986. My family moved out to California. But I'm the oldest of four and had spent my formative years there.
You did, so, huh, okay. So how was Kansas? How was growing up in Kansas City?
It was fun. It was fun. You know, we watched a movie the other day that had these kids, the Florida Project, which is a great movie people should go see. See, I can't turn it off.
I know, right?
And part of it is these 6-7-year-olds running around just by themselves, completely unsupervised. And somebody else in the panel was horrified. And I said, no, I kind of grew up like that.
Me
I lived
too, yeah.
in this area that was a relatively new suburban development, and there were a lot of houses under construction. And houses under construction are probably one of the best places to play around in mm-hmm. when you are 10 or 11 years old. It was awesome.
Yeah, no. I had the same thing. We would ride our bikes around, but if you guys remember from earlier post games, my dad made me work in construction at $2 an hour, as we were talking about earlier. Until I could earn enough money to buy my own bike. So for a long time, the other kids would have bikes and I would run behind them. Okay. And nonetheless, I still have this gut. It's a whole nother thing we can get into with Matt, he's lost a couple of humans in weight. Anyway, so, but we could go anywhere we wanted. We could, yeah. Totally unsupervised. That's part of why I think a lot of people liked Stranger Things. Like, mm-hmm. The actual content of it is okay, but I look like every episode, I was like, the 1970s and early 80s of America.
And, this is probably naive of me. I don't know that things are any more or less dangerous now than they were. I think that we have a better awareness. So maybe there was it's either things look worse because the media is really good at scaring us to make their news more popular, or it's that it was always that dangerous and we just didn't know it.
No, and that's a great, great question as to whether, I never believe that ignorance is bliss. And I think part of the whole point of this network is better to know than not know. But there's almost certainly, based on the statistics, it was way worse back then. And part of it was because we didn't know. And be like, oh, you're going to Uncle Bob's house and he likes to dress up kids. Well, that sounds great, right? And oh, he likes
dress
to
dress up party at Uncle Bob's.
That's right, right? And the stories from the camps. I mean, when people get into the stories from the camps, you're like, oh my God, I used to be jealous of the kids that went to camps. No, I'm not anymore.
Yeah.
Okay,
right. They were jealous of the kids that didn't go to camp.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's better that we know because now we're preventing it at a much greater rate. On the other hand, since we didn't know, we had this carefree childhood, which was amazing, right? And now everybody's panicked and got helmets and we're all living bubbles. And I know you should have a helmet, but I don't know.
I'm helmets, kind of we used to ride around in the back of my uncle's pickup.
I know, and right? that's a really bad idea.
Right, it's a terrible idea.
And by the way, I saw an accident that involved a pickup truck where they were riding in the back.
Oh.
Don't do that. No. Don't. Okay, that is not good old America, okay? So anyway.
But do you gain America points for having done that?
No, okay. No, you don't. No, you might gain Turkey points because I saw the crash in Turkey.
Okay.
Ugh. No, don't, trust me. Okay, anyway, so you're in Kansas City. Is it in the suburbs? Is it
in the suburbs.
Suburbs, yeah. Right. Is your house like the one in Stranger Things? Did you watch Stranger Things?
I did watch, not far off of that. Far off of that.
Okay, me too, but I was in New Jersey. What is your ethnic background, Matt?
All over the place.
Okay.
I'm a mutt. So my
father— You gained America points.
So my father is half Lebanese.
What?
Half Cajun.
What?
Is that fun? We're already having fun.
On my mom's side, her father was descended from Italian and German families, and then her mother's family tree goes back to like daughters of the American Revolution. So mostly European, and then some of the Lebanese thrown in there.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you say it, I see the Lebanese a little bit. I definitely see the Italian most of all. I don't see the German.
No, just a little.
Okay, ein bisschen. Okay, so that boy, that's super Mary. Just out of curiosity, the Lebanese side was Christian or Muslim?
Christian.
Christian, okay. Huge Christian population in Lebanon, if you don't know. Could have been Druze, but okay, Christian. So nobody knew what you were growing up, I imagine, right? So no, like I grew up Turkish, she right. grew up Armenian, mm-hmm. but didn't, what do you, like you
nobody
see what
knew what we were, and no one could pronounce my last name.
Achity?
They Achity. Could, in the Midwest, at that time, nobody could say it. And in fact, for a long time, even moving out here, I can easily tell when a telemarketer calls, because if there's a, is a Mr. Oh, no, no, because nobody can pronounce it, right? But yeah.
Wow, wait till Kansas City gets a load of jank Uyghur.
Right? And then the other thing too is, you know, in with some of the kids in school, like to them, Lebanese was the same as Libyan, was the, so people would call
of course.
Me, you know, there was a kid that would call me Momar.
For Gaddafi, right. for Colonel Gaddafi.
So of course, I'm like, okay, thanks Adolf. Like,
damn, you right? went there, and he's part German, he's got the immunity.
Well, look, like if he's like, sure, like if we're gonna go there, then we're gonna go there.
Okay, so I would go a little bit less sophisticated, I'd just kick their ass.
Wow, yeah.
So what I can't ever now think of Muammar Gaddafi without that great joke, I don't know who originally said it, like, God, what does it take to become a general in Libya? He was Colonel Gaddafi for 40 some odd years. Okay, anyway, but they mainly thought of you as Lebanese instead of Italian, or?
Yeah, it was, because that's what my dad always talked about, right? Like my dad always leaned into the Lebanese side of his family. Whereas, yeah. it's funny, his older brother always considered himself more Cajun than Lebanese. Uh-huh. But
I see the Cajun too, by the way.
My grandfather's parents had come from Lebanon directly. And so there were five kids. And so my whole extended family, some of them had grown up speaking the language. And we had Lebanese food at holidays all the time.
Oh, okay. So
all the time.
All right. So that's why culturally it was more dominant yeah. in your household.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. Even though it is actually one quarter of you or one eighth?
For me, it's one quarter.
Yeah. Okay, got you. So what did you do in high school? Were you in any clubs, teams, extracurricular?
Well, I moved out here in high school. So my freshman year of high school was at this Jesuit all boys high school that uh-huh. I didn't want to go to, but my dad had gone to, my grandfather had gone to, all my uncles had gone to Rockhurst High School. A great school, just I didn't want to go to the all boys school. It's this huge school. And we moved out here late in the summer of 86, and it was too late in the summer for my brother to get into Loyola, which is I could have got in, but my brother's a year behind me, and my mom didn't want us to go to two different high schools. It'd be, because if you know LA, Loyola is in one side of town, and any other school that Mark could get in was clear on the other side of town. So we ended up at a school called Campbell Hall in the Valley, which is now a co-ed school that goes all 12 grades. We got there and they were 3 years into being co-ed. They'd previously been all girls.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. All of a sudden, not so bad.
So I come from Kansas City out to California and go to this co-ed school that is still primarily a female school, like 66 kids in our class. And I think it was more girls than boys. Uh-huh. And, you know, warm California girls all, like, weather's great out here. It was awesome. So even in that moment, it was like, it'll never get better than this.
yeah. Did you guys live in the Valley?
No, we lived on the other side of the hill. So in Los Angeles, in the Hancock Park area.
Oh, okay.
And so
So
my sisters are at a different school because I'm the oldest of four. They're at grade school. And then I end up driving back and forth to school with my brother in this convertible that was the third car we had. So here I am in high school. Like, it was heaven. Like, it was really, I hit the jackpot. It was amazing.
Convertible, America points. Going to school with Valley girls, America points. Okay.
So I started playing football sophomore year. Uh-huh. It was a small enough school that the squad was small that somebody who was not huge could get on the team. We were playing 8-man football, which is, yeah.
Which is not football, deduct America
right.
points.
The school wasn't big enough to support an 11-man squad.
Doesn't matter, the America points have been deducted.
It was an 8-man squad, and we had to play both ways. We had to play offense and defense.
Well, that's fun, that's fun.
So was playing football and was in the acting company.
Oh, that's an interesting combo. Yeah,
it was fun.
So what positions did you play?
I was defensive tackle and sometimes played guard, but I wasn't very good at guard. So yeah. I was one of the few people who didn't have to play both ways, but I was defensive tackle.
Yeah. Okay, that makes sense. And what did you do in on the theater side?
Acted. Yeah, we did a bunch of plays in high school. First play we did was The Prime of Miss Jean Brody, which was set in Scotland. And I first night of the show, the whole team is there to support. And I walk out of my first scene in a kilt. And there's this gasp.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they were all very impressed that I was brave enough to wear a kilt.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else. No, I was like, what happened with the kilt?
No, they just were like, is that Matt in a kilt? Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, so where'd you go to college?
I went to college for 3 semesters at University of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Did not finish.
And how was San Francisco?
San Francisco was great. Mm-hmm. It's crazy expensive, but this was before the tech boom. Uh-huh. And even then, it was really crazy expensive, but that's a great city. And if I'd had my act together, I might have finished.
Uh-huh. Were you just like hate Ashbury High the whole time? Or
no, but I was at University of San Francisco, which is right over there.
Right.
I just didn't have the discipline at the time. And basically, you know, funny enough, you stop going to class, they tell you not to come back.
Yeah, that's weird how that turns out. That is so unfair.
I know.
Okay, and then so how'd you get into, I'm going to fast forward a little bit. How did you wind up basically running Rotten Tomatoes?
I've been working on the web off and on for about 20 years and had been at Yahoo running the movie site there for a while. And had left that job to do a music business that I had tried to start, that I had started with my dad that didn't work out after about a year. And so I needed to get back into something and saw two job postings at Fox Digital. Because that was when Fox owned Rotten Tomatoes. They'd done a big set of investments, including MySpace. And there were 2 jobs. One job was overseeing movie content on MySpace, which is the job that I really wanted. And didn't get and settled for the Rotten Tomatoes job.
That's funny.
Right?
That is hilarious.
I know.
So yeah. Tell me more about the one you wanted.
So this was a job at MySpace overseeing partnerships with the studios and getting their content up on MySpace.
Okay, got you.
And it was right probably a year before MySpace really started to crash.
Right. Oh, man.
I dodged a bullet huge there.
Yeah. But I know a lot of folks who worked at MySpace who now have great jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it didn't hurt them at all.
Does MySpace still exist? Yeah.
That's a great question. It does? Yeah.
There's like bans on it. But
there's bans on it. Yeah. Okay, got you.
Yeah, right. At one point, I know that Justin Timberlake was an investor in it and was trying to build it into a music platform. I don't think it ever hit quite what they wanted it to.
Yeah, it's like MySpace is like the joke of the internet, right? There's like a couple of jokes on the internet, and I say it all the time. We're so old. The first videos we put up were on MySpace, which is true. And the other is, of course, if you have an AOL email account.
I have a plaque from when I worked at AOL that was celebrating 3 million subscribers.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. See, Matt is old school internet. Man, when AOL only had 3 million subscribers, we now have 11 million subscribers.
I was working on this entertainment portal and we were producing videos, daily videos. This is so stupid. We're doing daily videos for people that you had a fast connection if you were on a 56K dial-up. And then we couldn't figure out why nobody was watching the video. Like,
yeah, of course.
Right?
Yeah. And so how did you get into the internet in the first place? Now, how's that for a broad question?
I was working at Universal Studios. I'd worked at Universal Studios in the tour at the theme park on and off. Like that was kind of my standby job if I really needed a job. Working in the theme park is really good for seasonal work. And then you can, if you have a level of competence, you can move up into like operations. So I was working at tour operations and I had this friend, a roommate who was working at a production company that had produced something called The Spot. Super old school internet people remember The Spot. And the group that did The Spot got acquired by AOL to produce something called Entertainment Asylum, which was an entertainment portal. And they needed production assistance, which I had been a PA on a couple of TV shows. and it was the early days of the internet, and all you really needed to know was how to work a computer, and that was it. And got in there, you know, when basically like you have some level of computer savvy, sure, you're hired.
Yeah, you know, for people who've succeeded, there's always, and we just did this with Ray Dalio, the guy who's one of the richest guys in the world, came in and did an interview at Ron's Bridgewater, and it's amazing what a difference showing up makes. Mm-hmm. You know, you show up, you do a competent job, people are like, oh, that guy does good work.
Yeah, okay, and just being persistent, I think. Like most people give up. Mm-hmm. And you know, I don't know what the exact quote is, but it's like 80% of the battle is showing up. It's mm-hmm. so true, like just show right. up. I mean, that's like the bare minimum, but it's a huge part of it.
Well, and the flip side, like maybe the more intense version of that is the Churchill quote, which is if you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
Right? Which is like, it's not ever, like nothing's permanent, right? So you might as well try something until it completely stops working. But you know, a lot of people I think get into positions where they think, oh, well, I'm never gonna get past this. And this is something I've only learned in the last few years. And if I could go back in time, one of the things I would tell my young self is, you know, when you look at big projects and they seem overwhelming. In fact, I've said that to a couple people here, like, don't worry, how do you eat a whole elephant? One bite at a time.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
And eventually you finish it.
Yeah, don't eat elephants. Okay.
No, they're delicious.
Minus America points.
Okay. I actually think if you ate an elephant, that would be plus America points. Come on.
I don't know. So I was just on a Wendy last time, my wife, and she tried all these different jobs, okay? And you said universal, and then we talked about just give it a shot and see what happens. So that's what triggered her for me. She was once a mascot.
What?
Like in, you know, yeah. in the outfit.
You know, I know what a mascot is, but yeah. like where?
In Taiwan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm like, babe, was that okay? She's like, are you kidding me? I loved it.
She did.
Yeah, she's like, it was so much fun. Everybody like wanted to take a picture with you, and they were and like da 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 da, and yeah, she was yeah. No, I don't think she said that.
But I never did the mascot thing, but I was a tour guide at Universal. I used to sit in front of the tram.
Yeah, see? Oh,
did you make the cheesy jokes?
Oh, that's all I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, they were terrible jokes. You see that little path running up to the psycho house? That's the psychopath.
Oh.
Now that's a joke after my own heart. Okay, one more thing about your career. So I know, again, another gigantically broad question, but how'd you get Rotten Tomatoes to do so well?
We picked a goal. So I look back, I didn't realize it at the time, but about a year into the job, this will sound somewhat mercenary, but I could see that the number one name in movie reviews, Roger Ebert, had really slowed down on what he was doing, right? Mm-hmm. He'd gotten sick, he'd talked about retiring, he was still writing, and he still had a couple years in him. But I said to my boss, there is an opportunity for us to take that space over. There's an opportunity for Rotten Tomatoes to take the place of Two Thumbs Up. Mm-hmm. And once I realized that, everything that we did day to day was in service of reaching that goal. So it was a lot of little pieces, right? And part of it was we never had a marketing budget, which meant that this is part of how I ended up on Young Turks, was that as the editor in chief, I would go and do I would do PR hits mm-hmm. to explain what Rotten Tomatoes was. And we did a lot of radio, and we did outlets that we knew would grow, and we did a lot of schmoozing with other it also helped that since the business model was to aggregate reviews and send traffic, we started doing that with news, and so mm-hmm. with movie news, and I could go to a movie journalist and say, hey, look, if you have some cool story, let us know, we'll link to it. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have a newsroom, why not? And mm-hmm. so tried to explain to everybody in the business that we were there to help elevate them because we needed critics to be successful and be acknowledged as an authority so that Rotten Tomatoes would be seen as valuable. And so I ended up getting to a place where I always thought that Rotten Tomatoes had three different audiences that we served. The big one is the person who's deciding what movie they want to see, right? Mm-hmm. The regular mm-hmm. person. But the other two audiences are the critics and the press, who will do a lot to evangelize us, and then the filmmakers. Because once the filmmakers and the stars start quoting the scores and the other press does, then the audience pays attention, right? Yeah. And that helps build the audience.
All of that is super smart. The other thing,
all of which we're going to do all that here.
God bless. The other thing about it, though, is that in the old world, in TV, it was just a zero-sum game. You either watch ABC, CBS, or NBC way back in the old days. But still zero-sum no matter what, right? And so it's very competitive. But online, you're allowed to and encouraged to, and it helps to build win-wins, right? So you bring in movie reviewers to Rotten Tomatoes. They win. Their work is promoted and published somewhere. A little bit larger than their own outlet, and you win because you've aggregated all the movie reviews in one place. So it's another, I hope, good life lesson, which is try to find ways that it's win-win. Because yeah, you could be like Trump and try to rip people off one after another, but that's actually harder in some ways, and then everybody hates you, and you've got the psychic trauma of that, and we're living that out right now, etc. But if you can set up win-wins, that's great. Then people like you, and you're better off.
Right.
Right.
Right. Well, and back in the day when there were only three networks, every once in a while you'd get someone that was smart enough to understand that the win-win across networks worked for them, right? I mean, witness Battle of the Network Stars, which
that's a great
hardly
point.
Anyone remembers anymore, although they've just rebooted it. But that show was insane. Like, you'd have Gabe Kaplan running against somebody. Like, you'd have these stars
I loved it.
Like, they'd smoke between the races that they do, right? But it was stars from across the network and even syndicated shows that would get together and do stuff. And you would see, you know, The Tonight Show might have the star of, you know, Dallas, which was on a competing network. At some point, somebody realized, oh yeah, you know what, we might as well do the win-win. Because you couldn't just pretend that the other networks didn't exist.
Right, that makes sense. You're too young for Battle of the Network Stars.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, it was
amazing.
I love that show.
Oh my God,
stars from different networks, their different shows, would go and they'd like race and tug of war. Tug of war was at the end,
right,
and it was going to decide everything. And it was so dramatic, and it was all
that
those
was
stars.
So stupid.
Oh, I loved it so much.
It's so funny. I have a friend who collects old shows like that, and he gave me some DVDs, and they're amazing. And it kind of ranks up there with Wide World of Sports. Like the old school 70s, early 80s version of Wide World of Sports, that's the kind of show that something like ESPN2 has basically killed. Mm-hmm. But it would be the opportunity for you to see sports that, like, you would never have seen, like, you know, competitive curling.
Yeah.
Right? Or the strongman competitions would show up on.
Like different size barrels for competitive curling? Like.
Yeah, maybe. Or just whatever it was. Like, it'd be something like, oh, that's a. Or like, you would never see Hi Lai on any show but that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or it'd be somebody like, oh, these guys are gonna race down Lombard Street on skateboards.
Right. Now, remember, there's no internet. So since TV, it wasn't big enough for TV, a lot of those sports, locals knew a Hi Lai in Florida, for example, but a lot of those sports in the rest of the country, nobody had ever seen, ever. Which now that there's the internet, it's just like, that doesn't make any sense. What do you mean you never saw it?
Right.
You never saw it. All there was TV, and if TV didn't cover it, you never saw it. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe you read a newspaper article about it, but probably not, okay? Mm-hmm. So, oh my God, those days were amazing. By the way, your friend for having all those old school shows, huge America points.
Oh yeah.
Okay. All right, last thing, personal life, what do you do for fun? We've been talking about bowling a lot lately. What do? You bowling, barbecue, what do you, fantasy football, what do you do?
I read a lot, because that's one of the things.
Minus America points.
That's one of the things that I, you know, it's hard. I can't watch movies or TV for fun. Like, I always feel pressure to watch something that I need to be able to use as a host, right? So that cuts out. So things like, I've never watched The Wire, right? We've talked about that on The Deuce, right? When we're doing our Deuce reviews, I talk about that and people freak out.
Yeah.
And I want to watch it, but there's no audience building value in me watching that show.
Dude, this guy works. Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. So the only thing I can really do, like, I play some games, although I was lamenting to my kid, I don't have enough time to like sit down and play the Xbox these days.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll hit the video games, I'll read some, and I'll DJ a bit. That's the one thing, like, I'll listen to music and I have turntables at home and I'll DJ.
You DJ?
I do.
I love doing these things.
Better than that. I can teach you how to match beats and scratch records.
You won't, because I didn't say.
I could teach Anna.
Okay, that's better.
No, I used to teach at the Scratch DJ Academy, and
what?
Yep.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay.
All right. That's unbelievable. Okay, so.
And you make bomb ass cocktails.
I do that too.
Yes.
I mix music, I mix drinks.
Yes.
Yeah. Those were good Mai Tais, weren't
they? Yes, yes.
So, what do you read? What do you mainly read?
A lot of sci-fi and fantasy stuff, the brain candy. I will read some, you know, I went through a kick where I was reading a lot of Elmore Leonard, and I will read some nonfiction if it's a topic that interests me. But I'll read the sci-fi stuff because it's an opportunity for me not to have to think about anything.
Have you met the king of the dorks, John Iderol?
I think that I might have a better claim on that title. Than
whoa, him. Shit just whoa. Got real.
We should have a nerd showdown.
Oh yeah, battle of the nerd stars.
Yeah.
All right,
nerd trivia with Kim and John and I and see who is the nerdiest.
That's pretty good. I don't know who would conduct a trivia. Maybe Brett. Okay. I lied. Super last thing. Drink. is Hawaii. You're obsessed with Hawaii. Why?
Because it's amazing. One of my first trips out of the continental US was to Hawaii. We're still living in Kansas City. And it is the almost that 50s post-war kind of fantasy of Hawaii that is so addictive and so amazing. And don't get me wrong, I love the reality of Hawaii. I have much love. I have friends that live there. It is a favorite place to visit, and I love the culture there. But there's also that kind of kitschy thing. And it also just, it relaxes me. Like, I'm the type of person, I go out and it's sunny outside, and I just feel better. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, wearing the Hawaiian shirts, it's like, man, things are okay. It reminds me to kind of relax.
Yeah.
Well, you were in Kansas City. If you like the sun, you moving to LA and vacationing in Hawaii is the correct move.
Yes.
Okay.
The dark move is that my wife's favorite place to, her idea of the perfect island lifestyle would be Ireland.
Oh.
Right.
Well, that's a little Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah. You know. So, which is why for the last 3 years, when I take my trip to Hawaii, it's Gabe and I going to visit my friends, and Jen stays here.
Oh, wow. Okay.
She doesn't go with you?
She doesn't like the sun.
Wow. That is interesting.
She doesn't want to spend the money for the airfare to go to some place that she's not going to enjoy.
The
ROI is not there.
Totally.
Right now, she will happily spend the money to go to Ireland or Scotland or Washington or Canada.
Well, I'm in between you guys. I love Ireland and Scotland, and I love Hawaii. So, all right, fine. I'll go with on both trips. You win. How many times have you been to Hawaii? You think?
Too many. I've probably lost count.
12 or 25?
Probably at least 20.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, in the last 5 or 6 years, I've gone probably 4 times. Like, I've gone the last 3 years. I think there was a year I didn't go. And then 2 years before that, I went at least once a year. It's a trip that if I don't go to Hawaii in a year, I've ended up going to someplace else like Fiji or New Zealand. Kind of the Pacific Islands are my favorite places to visit, but it's much easier in Hawaii because I have a friend that lives there now. Mm-hmm. And so all, you know, last couple trips, I've used frequent flyer miles and stayed at my friend's house, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that makes sense. Hawaii is addictive. I've gone twice, just went like the last 2 years, 3 years. In the last 3 years, I went twice, and that's the only time I hadn't gone. I thought I was like 45. And it's hard to get it out of your system if you go to the right places. Every once in a while I'll daydream about going back to Hawaii.
And even outside of the resort experience, right? Like the resort experience is great, but even just being there, like someone who lives there, right? And you really get into, you know, and you start to see, you know, in the last few weeks as Puerto Rico is coming up against the tenets of the Jones Act, that hits Hawaii real hard, right? I mean, that and the stipends that the military gets for housing does a huge number on the economy there. Because basic housing rates start off catastrophically high for most people that live there, if you're not in the military, coupled with the fact that every piece of freight that comes over has to come over from a US owned company, and that jacks prices up. So there's not this level of competition. And it really does mess with that economy really badly.
It does. And you know, you can just tell by the cost of food in Hawaii. It's insane.
Right.
Like I went, I've only been to Hawaii once. I went in 2008 on a family trip. And I was like shocked at how much a burger costs. Like just a regular fast food burger, right? But yeah, I didn't really put the pieces together until you mentioned the Jones Act.
The grocery, the cost of groceries there is you know, a can of soup will be, you know, anywhere from 50% to twice as much as you'd pay here.
Yeah.
Just because of the shipping. It's crazy, right?
It's super unfair.
The other thing is there's a, you know, and rightly so, there's a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of Hawaiians there that are still real raw about the takeover, the annexation of that country. And rightly so, right? But there's a lot of people that are still real raw and they're ready to kick everybody off tomorrow.
Like Mark Zuckerberg, that's a story we did. Yeah, first time I went out, we stayed at an Airbnb, and so it felt a lot more real, like we lived in Maui, and it was great, absolutely great. All right, we're out of time. Look, guys, Aggressive Progressive is coming up, and that's, you know, at 6 o'clock, and then at Pacific, 3 o'clock Hawaiian time. but then I'm also going to do a tape segment for you guys on the really important healthcare stuff that happened today, and a quick story about Russia infiltration, which is amazing. Matt, thank you for doing this.
Thank
you. We appreciate it. And we'll see you on What the Flick.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, see you guys soon.